Good evening. A pleasant little rain down here, and it's a raging storm at my house. It's really different. I have something surprising, and that is this book. Do you know this magazine? It's Japanese, and it's in it is an article about Koban and Steve Jobs, and I don't know what else. It's sent by the publisher because the woman who wrote the article about Koban interviewed me up at Chikoji. So I brought it for Kisayo to enjoy, because you and Bob can come back and tell us what it says. It's very interesting. It's very arty. And looks like very intellectual. But it's hard to exactly say. There are a lot of photographs in there of interesting looking people. So we are in the middle, or not quite the middle, but we're on what I'm calling number three of the mountains and rivers, or the mountains number three starts with the stone woman giving birth to a child. If someone would like to read. Thank you.
The stone woman gives birth to a child at night. Means that the moment when a barren woman gives birth to a child is called night. There are male stones, female stones, and non-male, non-female stones. Placed in the sky and in the earth, they are called heavenly stones and earthly stones. These are explained in the ordinary world, but not many people know about it. Understand the meaning of gives birth to a child. At the moment of giving birth to a child, is the mother separate from the child? Study not only that you become a mother when your child is born, but also that you become a child. This is to actualize giving birth and practice realization. Study and investigate this thoroughly. Yunmen, great master Kanyu Zen, said, "Eastern mountains travel on water." The meaning of these words brought forth that all mountains are eastern mountains, and all eastern mountains travel on water. Because of this, nine mountains, Mount Sumeru, and other mountains appear and have practiced realization. These are called eastern mountains. However, could you men penetrate the skin, flesh, bones, and marrow of the eastern mountains and their vital practice realization?
Yeah, let's read the next section and then we'll talk about it.
Now, in Great Song, China, there are careless fellows who form groups. They cannot be set straight by the few true masters. They say that the statement, "Eastern mountains travel on water," or "Nanquan's story of a sickle," is illogical. What they mean is that any words having to do with logical thought are not Buddha ancestors, Zen words. And that only illogical stories our Buddha ancestors' expressions. In this way, they consider Huangbo's strikings with the staff and Linji's shout as beyond logic and unconcerned thought. They regard these as words of great enlightenment that precede the rising of form. They say, ancient masters used expedient phrases which are beyond understanding to slash entangled vines. Those who say this have never seen a true master, and they have no eye of understanding. They are immature, foolish fellows, not even worth discussing. In China, these 200 or 300 years, there have been many groups of demons and 6 types of heretical thinkers. What a pity! The great road of Buddha ancestors is crumbling. People who hold this view are not even as good as Shravakas of the lesser vehicles, and are more foolish than those outside the way. They are neither lay people nor monks, neither human nor heavenly beings. They are more stupid than animals that learn the Buddha way. The illogical stories mentioned by those bald-headed fellows are only illogical for them, not for Buddha ancestors. Even though they do not understand, they should not neglect studying the Buddha ancestors' path of understanding. Even if it is beyond understanding in the end, their present understanding is off the mark. It is not only that they're...
No, I have personally seen and heard. It's on page 158.
I have personally seen and heard many people like this in Song China. How sad that they do not know about the phrases of illogical thought or penetrating logical thought in phrases. When I laughed at them in China, they had no response and remained silent. Their idea about logical words is only a distorted view. Even if there is no teacher to show them the original truth, their belief in spontaneous enlightenment, is a view of those outside the way. Know that Eastern...
No, that, and now we can stop. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was a long one, I know. But it's all of a piece, and that's very helpful for us. This last bit, it's a very typical Dogen diatribe against those demons, nasty people out there who just don't get it, which means you and me. So this mysterious thing about a stone woman is very ancient. I tried to figure out where to look to find the origin, but it's way back in the mists of time, I think. And various teachers talk about it in various different ways. Dido Luri had, to me, the most cogent way of talking about it as... As emptiness, that when everything has no, isn't discriminated, when there's no separation, then it's all of a piece. It's all, everything is all together as one, and that's what we call emptiness, pratichitsamutpada. It's a place in which we get lost. It's easy to get lost and think it's the only place to be. And so the stone woman giving birth is how emptiness, all oneness, gives birth to the world of things. And so this is an expression of the mountains walking being the world of dynamic action, and that even the world of emptiness is giving birth to itself, and that birth is us. And of course, we ourselves are giving birth continually. So it's a very beautiful very strange and beautiful image. If the stone woman is barren, that means there's no independent nature at all. In order to give birth, it has to come out of the situation itself, just like Mary gave birth to Jesus. It's the same thing. And the night, or complete darkness, is that state. The state when you can't tell one thing from another. And light is the time and place where we can make distinctions. So in that world, the mountains walk. Everything's walking. Everything comes into being, comes and goes. So in everything that we study, this view, and it's a dualistic view in a way, of form and emptiness, absolute and relative, samsara, nirvana, that they're posited, that they're brought up in order to help us to experience or point to the experience of how that's how our mind works, but the reality is different. That the reality is just one thing. They don't differ from each other, even though we feel like they do. And our thinking leads us to believe that they do. But in Zazen practice, the world of differentiation falls away. And with that falling away, we begin to experience the one world, the non-differentiated world, where the cry of the bird happens inside us. There isn't any inside and outside anymore. It's just all happening as everything. It doesn't mean we disappear or we become some kind of golden, fabulous being. It just means that we find how much bigger we are than we knew. How much bigger it is than we can possibly even know. So that's the most complicated part of this. And then this this bringing up the three famous teachers, four famous teachers, Yunmen and Nanquan, Huangbo and Linji, they all follow in step with each other. Each was the teacher of the next one. And so Yunmen brought up the eastern mountains traveling on water, which is the subject also of this, of Dogen's work. Nanyuan is the one who cut the cat in half. That's what the sickle is. And Wangbo had a staff that he used on his monks. He treated them pretty badly. In fact, he beat the tar out of Lin Ji. And Lin Ji's shout came when he finally understood what was happening and gave this enormous shout that accompanied his accepting of his place. So these examples are what he's using to show that these aren't magical things that happened that caused instant completely incredible or inexplainable flash of enlightenment. But they're perfectly logical and reasonable, that the events were reasonable, and that our practice is reasonable, even though the stories are kind of off the wall, it seems like. But they're off the wall because they're helping us to loosen up our minds and be able to think through rather than get stuck in ideas and belief systems. And to keep us grounded so that the reason the cat got cut in half was because the monks got all caught up in their minds and claimed the cat, you know, the two branches of the one monastery, and they each thought they owned the cat, and they wouldn't give way. And this was all just thinking. It was all just emotional thinking. And there was nothing that Nan Buon could do about it. So he just offered them the opportunity to stop fighting and save the cat's life. And they wouldn't do it. So it was a radical thing to do, but it was perfectly logical. They could have easily saved the cat. People think he was such a terrible teacher and so bad, but actually it was the monks. They were so caught up in their own... And we do that. We all do that. We all cherish our ideas and hate to give them up. So that's beautifully logical. And Wangbo only used his staff when people came to him, which is what Lin Ji did. He came and asked him just out of the blue to explain all of Buddhism to him. Mm-hmm. You know, just tell me, explain it to me. Here I am. And he got hit. He said, oh, well, please just tell me. Bam! Three times he got hit. And then Wangbo said, I can't do anything with you. You go and talk to Daiji. Ask him about this. So he went to talk to Daiji, and Daiji said, oh, Wangbo is such a kindly old grandmother. What a fabulous master he is. You better go back and ask him. So he went back, and they had a little dialogue in which Lin Ji ends up hitting Wangbo. And Wangbo says, ah! And then Lin Ji gives a great shout. And Wangbo says, now you go and sit with the monks. Just go and sit. So that, too, is very logical. He was a very stubborn young man, and he thought he could just go and get it. And they could have talked to him for a long time and tried to explain this and this and this. But instead of that, they just go and or just stop, really, is what they were saying. Just stop. And don't ask so many thoughty questions. I was with a friend yesterday who had been at a Zen center where they were giving a Dharma talk, and then the questions, and he said they were all so abstract, so esoteric, and all trying to figure it out, and he said it was just made him dizzy. So, and that's what Dogen is pointing to with this, that from this darkness and hugeness and mystery, things are happening. Life is happening. Life is surging. And it all has to do with light. So I love it when he gets grumpy. I used to hate it. I used to think, oh, how could he do that? That's so rude. Now I think it's okay. He's just sort of joshing us, really. He's joshing his listeners about sort of, are you one of those really demon-like people? Are you with me in this? And it kind of wakes you up. So it's a good thing. And I can just see him laughing at them in China, which is not a very nice thing to do either. But so are there questions? Samuel?
Well, I guess as a teacher, it's, you know, sometimes you get fed up and you need to whip out the stick and wake somebody up. But I wonder, the laughing part is, maybe it's something that you have to also not get upset by it as a teacher as well. I mean, yes, you are upset, you know, come on, wake up.
Mm-hmm.
I guess as a mother, as a
yes.
friend, you know, you yell at them, but it's like for a long time I'm upset, you know, and then I get upset about myself that I got upset.
Yeah.
So is this the laughter part? It's like to keep it in a... I mean, that's hard to do, to laugh.
It is.
But is this what it is about, or
well,
is that an interpretation that's a little far off?
I think he saw that they were on the wrong track, that they were caught up in the ideas of things and weren't really practicing. And he thought they were being very illogical and very silly. And
it's like, what's the recipe for that? I'd like to know.
Well,
how do you find out?
Well, maybe you don't get upset. Maybe you just choose to laugh instead of getting upset, which is a much more pleasant way of reacting for everybody. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be mean laughter, but just to see the absurdity of the situation, which is almost every situation we get ourselves tangled up in.
Yeah.
Sandra?
I guess I don't understand. He discourages the illogical, the striking with the staff and the shout. But to me, that sounds like sudden awakening.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not getting caught up in abstract sort of
yes.
reasoning or playing.
which isn't that the correct thing to do.
So I'm kind of confused. He seems to be on the flip side of where I'd expect him to be.
Yeah. Well, he wants to make sure that it's clear. It's so easy to get caught in the magic, the sort of magical thought about enlightenment, and he wants to ground it. And so, each of those is an expression of grounding of it. That it's not some fancy idea in a beautiful temple, it's out in the fields, you know, with a stick. And the body in utterly involved in all of it. And that's what this mountain thing is all about, too. It's all about the body and the life of the earth, of which we're a part.
So I guess he's shying away from you. Maybe the one extreme would be to rationalize and overthink, and then maybe the other extreme is to think with a pair of shouts,
yeah,
beating of sticks, you can get there.
Yes. Yes. Yes, exactly. And of course, those are all old Chinese. They're all back in the 700s and 800s. So, you know, just way, way, way back there from Dogen, too. And so in China, they had a very different way of practicing. Dogen didn't beat the tar out of his students. A new kind of practice had developed by Dogen's time. So they really are extreme, all of these stories. But we maintain the stories. I mean, they carry on, and some teachers do hit their students and give them a hard time. So,
the worst one is the story about the guy, the old monk. It was like the master would always hold up his finger.
Oh, yeah.
To point at the Dharma or whatever. And so this guy always imitating. The guy takes out a sword and chops off his finger. That's pretty brutal. And supposedly the guy becomes enlightened and gets his finger chopped off. I don't know how literally true these stories are, some of them, but that's pretty extreme.
It is extreme. It is extreme, and who knows how true it is. But what it's aiming to show is that the teacher had his own way. And if somebody else imitates somebody else's way, it's not authentic. And so this young boy, and it was a young boy, yeah, which is, makes it even worse. He started imitating the teacher and thinking he was a teacher and becoming very arrogant, and I'm sure he wouldn't stop. And so the teacher just showed him, you know, you've got to find your own way of doing it. And whether that happened or not, we can certainly learn from that. The truth of the story is that each of us has our own way. And that if we don't express our own way, that it's inauthentic. We're not true to ourself, meaning true to the self, to the whole of us. So all of them are sort of stories, and not moralistic stories exactly, but because they're so brutal and so extreme, but helpful, I think. If we don't get freaked out by him. Or grossed out by him. It's the samurai tradition too, you know. Or before the samurai tradition back then, it's how things were done. It was pretty brutal life and times.
Yeah. I'm watching this thing on the Chinese TV. It's called, I guess it's Outlaws of the Marsh or On the Water Margin. It's a big Russell Kessler's album. It's about the later part of the Sun Dynasty when things were sort of chaotic due to some changes in the classes related to it. And there were a lot of bandits, and a lot of the officials were very corrupt. I don't know, but I think he was really, I don't know if Bergen was there, but later part, earlier part, I don't know the dates he was there, was it 1200s or something like that, or 1100s?
I've forgotten at the moment.
But I was kind of wondering whether some of his diatribe.
Yeah.
Because it was a pretty unsettled period.
Yes, very.
The late Sun Dynasty. It's kind of funky.
Difficult time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the story of all these outlaws. They all do all their heroic things, and one of them is even a monk for a while, and learns some martial arts with Master Bigger, and gets these bad guys. At the end, they all ran together under somebody who was in the Imperial family. I think instead of rebelling, they sort of go along with reform things. But it's sort of interesting. This is a big digression. But
it's pretty brutal, you mean?
But all this stuff in this series.
Well, look at the stuff we watch. I mean, here, now, today. Yeah, our time too. Jeffrey?
I had two quick things I wanted to add. Last week I mentioned to you about the bald eagle.
Yes.
In Santa Cruz, and then this past week, there was another article about bald eagles, Crystal Springs. Yeah. Another news, which I wanted to share with you.
Fabulous.
The thing I wanted to share was an article I read in the New York Times magazine, which was very interesting about a new area of ecology and an environmental study that they're doing with sound. It's called sound ecology. And that is, it's very hard to go any place on the planet anymore where you don't hear the sound of a motor. Now, that motor could just be a jet plane or something.
Yes.
So, the article was about going up into Alaska to the Denali area. And I found this so fascinating. I was reading the article, it was real interesting. The woman who was writing the article was describing her experience in this mountain. They set up all their equipment, their audio equipment. And then, these aren't trained sitters, but they have to be quiet. And she it was like reading Dogen. She said, after a while, we became so quiet. Mm-hmm. She was describing hearing the sound of water,
mm-hmm.
all these natural sounds, and she said, I felt like I became the mountain. I'll bring the article.
I'd love to see
it. It was just mind-blowing. Somebody had a really amazing experience by, in this case, it required them to be quiet.
Yeah. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
There's a Tibetan group that wanted to do the 3-year retreat and wanted it to be in utter silence. And they searched for years and finally ended up deep in the Santa Lucia Mountains somewhere, out of the path of the planes and out of the path of the sound from the trains or anything else. And they're still there. I don't know where, because they keep it secret.
article mentioned that these places that we typically think of as, you know, like going to Yosemite,
yes,
or going to the Grand Canyon,
yeah,
they were talking about the sound of the helicopter hovers.
Oh, right.
Because usually these wonderful places like Yellowstone have all these planes that are coming in, you know,
yeah,
with people who want to see it from the air.
Yes.
And therefore these really beautiful places are no longer quiet places. Yeah. You're going to be constantly interrupted by the sound of that,
yeah,
motor.
A lot more helicopters than there used to be. I've noticed 20 years ago, certain places in the Sierra Nevada, a lot more birds. I guess in the landings of going back and forth.
Yeah. Yeah. Bye,
I wanted to mention that I think Cliff stopped a little article or some book off at Jacoji. And I read it just yesterday. It's called The Zen of Steve Jobs. And it basically is like this this cartoon, like,
oh, yeah,
type thing where they go through his meeting with Coben and how Coben influenced his,
right,
life.
Right.
It's really interesting if anyone, you know, wants to check it out. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw a part of it online. They published a little piece of it.
Forbes.
Before it came out, yeah. Thank you. Well, it's 8:00.